This is KSOP Cross Country. May is National Stroke Awareness Month, and the Utah chapter of the American Heart and Stroke Association has arranged for Dr. Lee Chung, a vascular neurologist with the University of Utah Stroke Center, to join us this morning. First of all, Doctor, let me welcome you to KSOP.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, this is so important, all of this information. So to begin with, in layman's terms, would you please define stroke for us?
Absolutely. Stroke is when there's an interruption of normal blood flow to part of the brain. And what happens is it starts to cause damage in the brain tissue and function starts to be lost. And most cases of stroke are due to insufficient blood flow, so what we call an ischemic stroke, usually due to a blood clot. Some cases of stroke can be excess bleeding into the brain tissue causing damage. The end result of both of these situations is damaged brain tissue, and we lose the function that that tissue normally does. And often that can result in permanent disability.
Now, how often might they be deadly?
You know, that's an interesting question. A couple generations ago, most strokes were fatal, and we really didn't have good treatments and didn't understand how to help folks survive. As our understanding of them has gotten better, the mortality or the percentage of people who actually die because of the stroke has gone down and down. And we're at a point where most people now survive a stroke. But what we're seeing is that more and more people are living for many, many years after having a stroke with the disability. And so the burden of stroke and its disability has increased over the years as we've gotten better at helping folks survive having a stroke.
As you mentioned, those disabilities can be very serious. And in those cases, then, it should be easy for most of us to understand that then requires a whole lot of assistance and help from caregivers, family, medical, and otherwise.
Absolutely. The burden can be, you know, really tough on not just patients, but families, loved ones, friends, communities, and society as a whole. It's very, very expensive to try to rehabilitate someone after a stroke or to try to help someone improve or adapt to disabilities. And so what we really want to focus on is how to prevent those disabilities in the first place.
Well, as a matter of fact, we can cover two things at the same time. Basically, what are some of the things that we can do to help prevent stroke? And that would also indicate what some of those causes are.
You know, that's really exciting. And one of the reasons I decided, you know, to learn more about stroke is because there have been very exciting advances in medicine to treat stroke, specifically to try to reverse stroke damage before it becomes permanent.
And what are some of the preventable causes?
There are many preventable causes. The number one cause of stroke is high blood pressure. If you were to cure high blood pressure around the world, you would eliminate almost two-thirds of strokes immediately. That's how big the burden of high blood pressure is. And so it's so important for folks to recognize and treat high blood pressure. Most people that have high blood pressure, it's not well controlled. Many of them don't even realize they have it. And so there are so few people who are able to recognize and treat their high blood pressure really quickly and prevent those strokes. But that's what we're going for.
Okay. And so what are some of the things we need to do to prevent high blood pressure then?
So regular screening, you know, every time I pick up medicines at the pharmacy, I see those blood pressure machines and I'm drawn to them. What's my blood pressure today? But also regular check-ins with your primary care provider, check-ins with a health fair. You know, it's so quick and easy to check your blood pressure. And it's even more important when you see an abnormal number to act on it, not just to assume that it'll go away or it's a fluke, but really to take it seriously because there are so many downstream consequences of the brain and other organs of high blood pressure.
And as is the case with so many of the health problems that we have, I'm assuming that diet and exercise are a major aspect of prevention.
Absolutely. Physical inactivity, you know, suboptimal diet, high blood sugar in the form of diabetes, sleep apnea, high cholesterol, all of these things contribute a great deal. Smoking is a great example that as a society made significant understanding, you know, improvements in understanding of how it causes heart disease and stroke. And so we've made some progress there in reducing the incidence of smoking, but that's a very modifiable risk factor for vascular disease.
Now, about how many people are having a second stroke?
Quite a few. You know, one of the largest risk factors for having a stroke is that you've had one before. And so we know that once you've had one, you're at high risk of having another one without, you know, optimal treatment. And so that's why it's so important to look at these risk factors and reduce your second, you know, prevent your third, fourth, fifth stroke. That's so important.
Now, you alluded to possible treatments if somebody finds that they're having some of the symptoms of stroke, which we'll talk about as well. I know that there's now a clot-busting drug that is proving to be fairly effective.
Yes, exactly. And that's one of the exciting things about treating patients with stroke is we have several options now to remove clots that are causing a stroke before the damage is permanent and reverse symptoms of stroke. We have medications that can dissolve clots, and we have devices that can pull clots out of blood vessels. And together, these are kind of the frontline tools that we use to try to reverse stroke before it becomes permanent. The thing about these treatments is they have to be delivered very, very quickly, within hours, preferably less than an hour if possible, from when the stroke starts. And one of the biggest reasons we can't use these treatments for all stroke patients is because of a delay to getting to a hospital. Either they didn't call 911 immediately, or they thought the symptoms would go away, or maybe no one was with them when the symptoms came on to be able to take them to the hospital. But that's one of the biggest things we're battling against as far as not being able to roll this treatment out to more stroke patients.
Well, in an effort to help people realize how immediate action is necessary, let's talk about the acronym FAST and what each of those letters means to people who might see someone who could be showing the symptoms of a stroke.
Yeah. So FAST is a mnemonic for the signs that someone may be having a stroke. It's a simple acronym, but deceptively useful. And so first of all, the acronym, the F stands for face, so any kind of facial drooping on one side. A stands for arm weakness. So if you have someone try to hold up both their arms, I say, you know, like you're trying to fly like Superman or like a zombie, you know, and one of those arms drifts down, then I'd be worried about a stroke. S stands for speech. And that could be slurred speech, that could be speech that makes no sense, or even someone's not understanding other people's speech. Any of those could be a symptom of a stroke. T is time to call 911. And really 911 is the best way to go, because if you have the paramedics meet you at your house, they can collect more helpful information about your medications and your history. They can call the hospital ahead of time to warn us to expect a stroke patient to arrive, and so we can have the whole team assembled at the door. Whereas if someone doesn't call 911 and drives into the hospital, then we may not be expecting them, and it may take longer to get the stroke team assembled.
And also, as you alluded to a little while ago, if it isn't treated immediately, then we do have that brain loss, which of course is so significant. And any of the brain loss that you can avoid means a better outcome.
Absolutely. You know, for every minute that a stroke continues on without reperfusion treatment, one of these clot removing therapies I mentioned, every minute is 1.9 million neurons lost. Those are brain cells that won't be able to come back. And we can, you know, rewire to a limited extent around stroke damage, but it's a very slow process. And so by far the most cost-effective and time-effective and disability-sparing approach is to prevent that damage or reverse that damage before it becomes permanent. And that's why even minutes count in stroke treatment.
Now, is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about stroke and its prevention?
I think that, you know, stroke is really common. One in six of us will have a stroke. And so I think all of us know or close to someone who's been deeply affected by stroke, myself included. And I think that, you know, as our population ages and we have other medical breakthroughs to live longer and longer, I think the burden of stroke will continue to increase, actually. And so I think it's so important to recognize the signs, to recognize the modifiable risk factors, to do everything we can to reduce the number of strokes and the burden of strokes on our quality of lives.
Now, we also have with us Jennifer Merbeck from the Utah chapter of the Heart and Stroke Association. And Jennifer, you have a big event coming up that we'd like to give everybody a heads up so that they can get it on their calendar and make plans to be there. So give us the lowdown on the big event.
Sure. Thank you, Dick. I appreciate it. We have our Heart and Stroke Ball coming up on June 13th at the Grand America Hotel. And this is probably our biggest social event for the year. We have medical professionals, as well as corporate professionals, survivors, families of survivors, all coming together for an evening of celebration, as well as a push for continued involvement to help us end heart disease and stroke in Utah and across the U.S. and the world.
Now, how can someone get more information on the ball, but also go ahead and make reservations probably?
So what you can do, the best way to go about it is either to call our office, which is 801-702-4420, or the other thing is you can go to utahheartball.heart.org.
All right, if you'll give that one more time.
Sure.
I can't remember it already.
utahheartball.heart.org. And that's where you can find out the ticket information and all of the details for what time it starts, the cocktail hour, silent auction, and then we'll have a live auction and program during the evening as well. And we do have three amazing honorees this year. We will be honoring Dr. Roger Friedman. He is a cardiologist at University of Utah Health. And then we are also honoring Dave and Kathy Thomas of Thomas Arts for their longtime support of the American Heart Association. So it will be, like I said, an evening of celebration for the work that these three individuals have done in the community to help us live longer, healthier lives.
Thanks to Dr. Lee Chung and Jennifer Merbeck for being with us on KSOP Cross Country. I'm Dick Jacobson. The program is a public service of KSOP Incorporated.